Why don't we start with the latest project I've seen you with is the Rory Danger.
Oh yeah.
And the Danger Dangers. So where did that come from?
That came from, I think, a handful of things, but partly from this new phase I've been experiencing, which is kind of nice, which is the, I don't know if I'm allowed to, I can just say whatever I want to, which is the I don't give a fuck phase.
Okay.
Which is not in a mean way, but just in the sort of artistic way of, like, only recently have I started really seeing the people that I really admire around New Orleans and around town, like, just try to do what they want to do without caring about what people think about it or what people are going to think.
You only just started seeing that? Or?
I only just started feeling that in myself, like, okay. not looking for approval and not looking for acceptance necessarily by my peers. It's kind of a new phase for me.
That's good.
So I think the Danger Dangers just came out of wanting to do something that's partly a joke, but also partly fun and just something that's totally different than what I do around town.
Is there something in it that is closer to what you would want to do than what you were doing before? I mean, were you really looking for approval for a long time? Or?
I think in the realms of, like, traditional jazz, which is what I've been playing a lot, for sure I was looking for approval from my peers. Uh-huh. And, for, you know, it's a huge it's a huge tradition, especially in this town, so...
Who are your peers?
Well, I mean, I think of my peers as the younger people my age that have moved to this town to play that music. Although, more recently, I think that my visions have kind of shifted about who I want to be playing music with in terms of attitudes and creativity. So, I don't know, in a way, I guess in a way we're all of us are all peers, whether we like it or not.
You mean all...
All musicians in this town, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then it just depends, like, who you look towards for inspiration or who you look towards for
How did you
approval.
Feel that your peers were qualified to decide...
it's that weird thing of I do respect what a lot of these people are doing here in town. I think there's, like, really skilled and great musicians here in town, I guess, in that younger set of musicians. So there is a part of me that, like, looks for acceptance by them.
But now you're talking about expressing yourself in another way, and just before we go there, so what did you feel that the people that were moving here to play traditional jazz were expressing? I mean, why were they doing that, do you think?
That's a big question. I think there's like, we've all seen this resurgence of traditional jazz here in New Orleans, it seems like, amongst young people, and I think part of that is, like, these waves of reaction of jazz becoming institutionalized in schools, and a lot of people my age maybe went to school to study jazz or to study music or to study improvisational music, and then it kind of, through becoming institutionalized, I think part of, I don't know, I'm not sure, but I do think that part of jazz, like, the spirit of what jazz started out as, is kind of lost in terms of originality, individuality, in improvisation and creation. Like, get to an institution and you're told you have to learn these solos, you have to learn these licks, like, these are the proper things to play over these chords, and that's useful to a point. That's very, like, technique is always useful, but also, in my experience, what I've seen of, like, jazz becoming institutionalized is, like, you listen to all the kids that are coming out of North Texas and they all are monsters, but they all sound the same. There's nothing that interesting about them.
What do you feel is keeping them from being interesting?
I think it's wanting to be, like, accepted. I think
it's that everybody's looking for approval.
Yeah, and I mean, anything, like, when anything becomes canonized or institutionalized, it is, like, there's a right, there becomes a right and wrong, you know?
And so it's interesting, though, that the people that are rebelling against that are taking on a music that's even more canonized. I mean, yeah. That's what strikes me.
I'm not sure that's a rebellion, but I do think it's slightly like a reaction of, like, it's partly like a self-serving, like, they're young people, we are young people, and like taking a step back to this more archaic jazz of like the 30s and 20s is like, it goes back to like being more social. It goes back to like being a dance music, being a social music, being a music that girls like, being a, you know, like there is something to it in that, like there's a socialness involved in it that I don't see happening as much in like later modern jazz.
What's the cutoff there?
I'm
interested in the subject.
Trad to modern jazz?
Yeah, like what's the cutoff? Well, I mean, what's the cutoff with when people stop going to jazz as a social thing?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
because it seems like the audiences grew and grew and grew and grew, and you see Miles Davis here playing in stadiums.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and that's modern.
I don't know. I mean, I do think it has something to do with like it becoming institutionalized. I don't know when that is, but I would imagine sometime kind of like during the 80s, you know, like Brecker Brothers, like post, maybe even pre, right around when the Brecker Brothers were coming around, like few, it seemed like, I don't know, I'm not an aficionado on that, but it seems like kind of like fusion, like it all started to get a little.
Have you met some of the older players from New Orleans that you have played, that played all through the various eras of jazz here?
Not as many as I should. I mean, I guess I've hung out with Wendell Brunius a little bit.
Yeah.
Actually, the first time I ever met Wendell Brunius, I was like massively starstruck because I had been listening to Preservation Hall recordings for forever. And the first time I ever met him, he came to Oberlin where I went to school. The Preservation Hall jazz band came to Oberlin where I went to school, and they played a concert. And then there was like an after-hours hang or something with them that a friend of mine brought me to, and all the Preservation Hall guys, well, at least Wendell, and there was a couple other guys, I don't remember who it was, were, they were all like, y'all, you want to play some music? And then the kids were like, yeah, we do, so When the Saints Go Marching In, or what do you guys want to play? And I remember Wendell really specifically being like, man, I gotta play that shit all the time, like, let's play some, like, bebop, or let's play some, you know?
Right.
I remember that really specifically. It was a really interesting moment of, oh, yeah, I guess I could see that you would get tired of only doing that one thing.
Yeah.
Do
you have an idea about why you think he does it?
I mean, I do. I think it is beautiful music. Like, I like that. I, you know, like, and he's from here, and there, you know, there's something, and it is like social, and it fits into this cultural, you know, the culture of New Orleans. It kind of is a natural fit for that. So, I imagine he does it for that. I imagine because it's a tourist commodity here in New Orleans, and it's a way of making a living.
Do you think a lot of there's a lot of impetus for that in the musicians that you're calling your peers that moved here from other places, is the fact that they've come into a place where I don't know. I mean, it seems like they're doing very well out there playing gigs and whatnot, doing that music.
I think for sure. Yeah, I think for sure that's a part of it. Is like it's one of the few forms of few places and few like forms that is making money here or anywhere in the country, but like here specifically that sells more than,
I mean, it's striking me because it didn't before you all showed up,
right?
Like it had no existence.
That's
there
crazy.
Was nothing. There was zero.
That's crazy.
Like to explain like, you know, like I'm about, I don't know how old you are, but you know, like
31.
You're 31, so it matters. So if you're, I'm 11 years older than you.
Yeah.
My entire experience in New Orleans has. I knew
different.
Danny Barker. I mean, I knew those musicians, and I played with Kermit Ruffins when he started out doing that. But Kermit was coming off of the brass band bag and doing older songs was totally out of nowhere.
Really?
And a lot of people that had played that music for years were like, "What do you want to do that for?"
Wow.
A lot of the greats. And they didn't even, so it's interesting, you know, I'm interested in the perceptions because, of course, I had a perception about some other kind of thing that was going on in New Orleans music that was loaded with my own misperceptions of or misunderstandings of what had been going on here in the growth of music, but or delusions, whatever, not misperception. I don't really know how to put it, but I can understand. But I'm it's interesting, you know, to hear about it because it, you know.
What's interesting is that like a lot of us don't know. I know a little bit maybe because I hang out with like Coogan or Singleton sometimes, but like me included, but I think a lot of my peers also like don't know that much about that era of, you know, like what they don't know that much about like Dr. John or like the funk scene that was huge here, or like the uptown scene that was really huge, or the, you know, like any of that, like don't know that much about that history. So it is really, it's always interesting to hear like James talk about like when he played on Bourbon Street and he, you know, played those gigs that were like 10 to 2 and then went to another gig that was 2 to 6 and like this is where like everyone like mixed in some different way, like it was a whole different
thing,
aesthetic, I guess.
So would you think there's a similarity, what do you think, do you think there's differences between say when you hear Wendell's music and the music that is going on largely in the clubs around, I guess, what are we talking about, Frenchman Street and whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, for sure you hear Wendell. I mean, Wendell just is more calm, I think, in a way, the way Wendell plays, because it's very grounded. But I think that's also a double-edged sword, because there's been a handful of times, I don't know, recently that I've been like, I'm going to go at Preservation Hall, I'm going to go sit and listen and like, you know, learn from my elders and sit and listen and learn from that, and from the people that have like grown up in New Orleans and grew up with this music, and a lot of times it sounds tired. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, not so much with Wendell and not with Mark Bro, and you know, there's a handful of players that I really really enjoy going to listen to them, but it doesn't seem, it's not pushing any envelopes, you know. Although they are really stellar players, like Mark and Wendell, they sound great, you know, all of their ideas are really clear and you feel like very safe in their hands as soloists or
so they band feel leaders. Like, so when I was saying about authority, so do you feel that they're an authority?
Yeah, for sure. Like Leroy, you know, all those Leroy, Mitchell Player, Wendell, like all those guys are definitely authority. I mean, you know, all those guys that play at Preservation Hall are authorities, and I'm not discounting that, but I do. There have been times when I've gone there that it sounds tired. And that is maybe the difference of, like, a little bit. This younger generation is... They seem to be excited about it, at least, you know. So there is some energy and a scene surrounding it, for better or for worse, you know.
So, at what point... And so then you decided, though, recently, I guess, that you don't... you're not looking for approval from anybody. And so what are the parameters, what are things that you're interested in that now are in the mix that weren't before while you were looking at that?
I don't know. I mean, for sure there's, you know, it's like growing in two different ways at the same time. Like, for sure there's a lot, you know, there's a lot more in the tradition that I can learn from these recordings and from my peers and from my elders, and then there's a lot more of like, okay, if I'm going to invest time in learning this music that's from like 1930, then I need to invest an equal amount of time in like learning like what do I want to do with those skills that I'm learning in the present day, because like I don't live in 1930. And it's not a you know, like saying that like I've stopped kind of looking for approval. It's not that I disrespect any of my peers, because like, I do respect them very much, and it is nice to have like other people growing alongside you that kind of pushes you forward. But it's also at the point of like I'm not that interested in sounding like a recording anymore. I'm not, you know, I'm not interested in being a museum piece. And I couldn't, I couldn't play like Sidney Bechet if I wanted to, so it's sort of like I can learn a lot from those recordings, and I can transcribe things, and you know.
I'm inserting my opinion here. No one can play like
right.
Alexei Boucher, and he wanted it that way.
Yeah, exactly. So it's sort of like, what's the point of trying to be a recreation piece? Well, you know, like,
I can go along with the idea that some things in music, you know, the etudes all over classical music, and there's a big history of things that are studies and stuff and learning, but I'm not sure. You know, I had a discussion, it's interesting, there was another discussion in an earlier interview with Jimbo about, you know, being in the academy and how much of it is, how much of the way that they teach is in, has to do with the historical idea about the line of developments.
Right.
And then, that's an idea. I was talking about the fact that really, you know, the historical line is an idea. It's a funny thing. It's not portrayed every kind of music. It's not.
Right.
It's not in everything.
And well, so that's
a funny.
That's the whole thing of like history is just one person's story. You know, just the way it gets passed down. Because I'm sure there's plenty of players that played around Sidney Bechet's era that were never recorded.
Now, how did you decide? What did you play music your whole life?
I mean, I never had music lessons until I went to college.
That was the first time you had music lessons?
I had like some flute lessons in high school. I had like three.
Flute, lessons. Was that the first instrument that you were?
The first instrument, I mean, we had a piano in my house, and my mom plays piano a little bit.
Okay.
So we always had a piano in the house, and I have three older siblings, and they all dabbled a little bit, although I think they all kind of dropped off playing after high school or something.
Uh-huh.
So there are always like some instruments lying around. There's always a piano. I played at saxophone for, I think, like 6 months when I was in fifth grade or something. Mm-hmm. And then we moved, and then I played oboe for a while till it got stolen, and then I switched to the flute. That was the kind of the main track. And then I went to school and I studied electronic music and composition.
Really?
Yeah.
Why did you go there to study electronic music and composition?
No.
What did you go for?
It's kind of that bad. I mean, it was at Oberlin, so I just went. It was a liberal arts school.
Okay.
It's a college, and then there's also a conservatory attached to it. So I went just as like, you know, a young kid that's like, woo, college subjects. And I knew, I mean, I definitely knew that I wanted to study music. I really liked music. You know, I played in band.
Mm-hmm.
In high school, we had a small band. And I was okay at the piano. But then I got to college and I just sort of started taking classes I was interested in, which once I got to my junior year, my advisor looked at my schedule and he was like, you're not going to grant, like, what have you been doing? And I was like, I was just taking classes I'm interested in. I took a bunch of art installation classes and some like survey of theater classes. I was really interested in playwriting and electronic music classes and some theory. You know, it was pretty music heavy, but not like very strict.
So how do you think you decided on those sorts of directions, even to pick those kind of classes? I mean, not according to what they think.
I mean, I'm interested, but I'm very interested in like original compositions, or really original creations, original compositions. I think those are what interests me the most. So I guess that was kind of how I picked those classes of, you know, listening to any piece of music and thinking, like, oh, if I could just write a piece of music like that, I would die happy.
So, if that's, it seems like it's very roundabout then, if you were going for contemporary expression to spend that level of, time and energy and resource into a kind of archival research.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Why did you do it?
I don't know. I think life leads you in these strange phases or these strange paths. You know, there's definitely have been times when I'm like, wait a minute, how did I end up here?
Uh-huh.
I mean, this music, I did listen, I do have to say, I did listen to, like, Preservation Hall recordings when I was younger.
Uh-huh.
I do remember, we did have, like, you know, my dad had a couple of Preservation Hall records with Clarence Williams and, well, had Clarence Williams records and then also Preservation Hall records and then he also had Stravinsky and a shit ton of Barbra Streisand, Joan Baez. That was, you know,
so those
some good with the bad.